Dobar dan na valovih Radija Študent ali pa dobar dan na internetu Cirkulacije 2. We have here a special guest, John Duncan.
Good afternoon.
So John Duncan is American artist but living abroad almost half a life.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. More than half a life.
More than half a life. But yeah. You still remember where you were born.
All too well, yeah.
Yeah. But you try to get away from it, to forget
since
it?
I left, yeah.
Because you said that you are still in good relations with the parents. You still communicate with them.
Well, my father died.
Uh-huh.
So we have conversations, but and they're more friendly now.
Okay, so here are somehow the situation is that we've invited you to work on some kind of horizontal level, but
yeah.
You as elderly person, so to somehow share the information or experiences, especially experiences that we have on the level of sound art, especially sound art, but also on the level of this, what we call intermediate art. Here is also Stefan Döpner, who is part of Cirkulacija, and Boštjan Leskovšek, also part of Cirkulacija, and Iva Tratnik, the newest part of Cirkulacija.
Comet at Cirkulacija.
Who?
A comet.
Comet.
Sometimes she appears and then she disappears and comes back.
But maybe the beginnings, no? Let's say the beginnings of you, right? Because this is presentation of you. I find your topics of interest, which are, for instance, I don't know, a bit outside of the sound for which you are best known, in a body.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And tell us something about
the. Well, the thing that sort of led me into the body was the idea that certain topics, certain things were not discussed, were not talked about, were not acknowledged. You didn't think about them, you didn't deal with them. And I learned that from the example in my family that by trying to ignore these things, by trying to ignore the body, by trying to ignore basically anything, that it enslaves you. So the idea was of exploring these things was to try to find out what they are in order to avoid being manipulated by them.
And you think this manipulation came from the society, the state also?
Well, it came from my family. I don't know. It came from the religion that they followed. It came from not asking questions. It came from refusing to examine something, to simply accept it instead of looking at it and trying to really understand it.
And you use Wilhelm Reich a lot?
Yeah. Some time ago, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I think before I was elderly.
It's about the problems of sexual repression.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you, give some hints about eyes.
You can give?
No, you.
I think John can do it better. But if we are not interested in this, then you can skip it. Nah? So body is important. You were becoming active in the 70s.
Yeah.
You studied in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
With Professor
Alan Kaprow.
So this might, Stefan might do some enlightenment. Who is?
No, I'm not. I'm just impressed, but I cannot tell too much, to be honest. I'm such a academic.
Alan Kaprow was the guy who invented the happening. Mm-hmm. And he was in the school that I attended. The students were all given mentors, and he was assigned as my mentor. So he would come and look every once in a while at the work that I'd made, and we'd talk about ideas. And more than that, we sort of became friends, and we kept contact long after I left school. So we would talk about a number of different things. For one thing, he told me, don't ever, ever, ever have any children. Big mistake. Don't ever do it. So that was one.
Did he say why?
No, he didn't say why.
Like you cannot be a successful artist when you have children or something like
no,
that.
No, he just said what was unsaid was that, I mean, he never said it in so many words, but the implication was that your freedom to do what you want, to live the way you want, is gone when you have kids.
And he had kids?
He had three.
Translated, I also found that you already were dealing with this in practice as an artist. with these happenings, also in homes. You had
then. There were there was one performance that I did called Scare, where the where I went to houses of people I knew, two people that I knew, and knocked on the door. When they, as soon as they opened the door, I shot them in the face with a blank gun and then took off. I was wearing a mask, so they couldn't see who it was. So they opened the door to a stranger who shoots them in the face and takes off. Then the idea of that came from a mugging. I was attacked on the street. And when there were three kids who came up to us. Two of them were talking to us, giving the idea that they had a gun. And there were three of them. But the third person circled around behind us and hit me over the back of the head with a stick that broke when it hit. So I heard this really loud crack in my right at my ear, and if you're hit at a certain point in the neck, you just fall. It's a classic judo and karate move to hit somebody just in a certain place in the neck, and they just. If you're hit like that, you lose control of your body for a second. You just fall like a sack. So I got hit and I fell, and I thought while I fell that I'd been shot in the neck. So I pulled my hand away place where I was hit, yeah. And my hand was dry. There was nothing. There was no, there was no blood. There was nothing there at all. So I knew I was okay. And I went from cold terror to hot anger in a split second. And that moment of going from one extreme to another, like that, I thought was an art experience, and I wanted to give that experience to other people.
To a friend.
So I chose people who I knew well, who I thought, I considered this very carefully for a couple of weeks, actually, trying to figure who would be able to appreciate this in the way that I intended, and not turn it into a source for paranoia or revenge or something outside of that this moment.
Yeah.
Who could just deal with this moment itself? There were two people, and I did this to both of them, and then called them a day or two afterwards to tell them that I was the person who had done this, and to find out if they had accepted it in the way that I had intended. And they did.
Really?
Both of them?
Yeah, they both did.
I hardly believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And were you speaking about this possible experience, like then, which you had and which you wanted to transport?
Well, talking to them about the experience was unnecessary because that was their experience.
That was their experience, and that was
having this gun go off in their face was their experience.
So it was a acoustic shot, but not a shot, or no, just click.
It was a gun loaded with blanks.
Yeah,
yeah. It was a 9mm Smith & Wesson pistol loaded with blanks.
Yeah, I read about this. I was really also wondering what these people. I know this story. Can it, is it possible?
It's a fairly well-known story. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah.
I thought this guy is crazy. When I heard it first.
Yeah, well,
I
they
say,
said the
know?
Same thing. They still do. Yeah, they still do.
But they are artists.
Yeah.
The guys.
Yeah, they're both artists.
And you, you think that they achieved some higher level of accepting the moment or the life?
That I don't know, but we are still friends. So at
yeah,
least
that's a lot,
they
yeah.
still, yeah, 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 there is that.
And when you were attacked, did it? Do you think that it changed how you withstand the world? You're not scared anymore
Mm-mm.
so much?
I'm not, no.
Huh? So
no. I had a job where I was wearing a uniform. I was a bus driver, and people would come on and threaten me every 20 minutes with something, with a knife or a pistol or a chain. And after a while, you just go... Yeah, if you're going to do it, go stand in line. All these other people want to do the same thing.
Yeah. What job was this?
Driving a bus. South Central Los Angeles.
Okay.
9 p.m. to 6 a.m., so I was out there all night. Yeah. Yeah. So, no, I'm not afraid of weapons or being attacked or... yeah. If someone actually shoots me, then they, then that's just game over. They do me a favor. Yeah.
And at that time, you already were dealing also with sound as medium, artistic material.
Yeah. I really got into making sound. Yeah, right around that same time. That's true. That's true. That's
Which was when?
76, 77. Yeah, 100 years ago.
With elderly, he meant just like...
I know,
you know,
I know,
like
I know, I know.
Elder statesman, for example.
Yeah.
You're the elder noise man. That's
yeah.
The father of...
Yeah,
like, you know, Stelag
children,
is...
which are us.
Stelag
uncle.
Is... how it's called with Stelag, he's...
grandfather.
No, not grandfather, but...
Doctor of. The Duke of. The Count
The Godfather. The Godfather of cyber...
Yeah.
Something, they call him.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
So and then at some point you left for Japan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably escaping the army or not?
No, I was very lucky in that way. I'm registered as a conscientious objector.
Which means?
It means that you don't fight.
But you were drafted, I think,
that was,
in some hospital, yeah. Like you were. Actually, you were
conscientious. Like the civil, then you do some civil service instead?
They didn't ask me to do that.
I am.
Because the army induction changed the year after I was given this status.
Yeah. It was no more drafting then.
Right.
It was professional army.
Well, yeah, it was a volunteer army.
A volunteer.
Yeah.
So, and in Japan, what I read was that you were becoming very active with the noise scene, the sound, art scene. Also on the level of this toilet exhibitions.
Toilet Exhibition was a series of collages that I did where it was the collages combined material from pornographic magazines and news images, especially news images from bombings, from mass killings or mass.
This wasn't in the '80s.
Yeah, this was. There were images coming from Beirut. News images that we see now. I mean, you can. Now it's Aleppo. You see images coming from Syria. You see images of homes of cities that are completely destroyed. Gaza, another classic example.
And was it called, like, was there something called, like, a noise scene already in that time, or was it in the
that. It was, at that time, it was a group of people who were just making as much chaotic noise as they could make.
So it was really different from this industrial scene also.
Yeah. In Japan, there is chaos all around you, all the time. There is no privacy. There is just bombardment, constant bombardment, visually, in terms of sound, in terms of lights flashing, in terms of moving images, constantly imposing themselves on your field of vision. So the noise scene in Japan was a response to that. It was like a reaction to that more than being part of some large machine. And I found that much more sort of immediate and interesting. I mean, more relevant to what I was seeing every day. Well, let me give an example of a concert, a noise concert, a group called Hijokaidan. Everybody was calling themselves kings of noise. It was. I mean, Merzbau did it, and Masona did it. Hijokaidan did it all the time. The Incapacitants did it. But there were a lot of different people doing a kind of chaotic moments. Hijokaidan, for example, would perform and Junko, the vocalist, would perform in a wedding dress. Mikawa Toshiji, who worked in a bank, would come on stage in his suit. Jojo Hiroshige would play guitar. Mikawa was playing electronics that he'd built, and he would overdrive the whatever machine he had with him until it burned up. Junko would lift up her wedding dress and piss on the stage, and then Mikawa would run around on the stage in his suit and slip and fall in the piss, and then go wear this suit the next day to the bank where he worked. And you know, I mean, he was a commodities broker, so his customers had to take him seriously. He represented the bank, but he's the next day he's there smelling a piss. Yeah, this kind of thing was going on. And then in the background, we did this together. We did this together. They're doing that on the stage, and I'm in the back with a smoke machine, filling the room with smoke, so nobody could see anything. People on the stage couldn't see each other. The whole place was just completely full of smoke. Yeah.
And this is kind of punk then. Japanese punk?
It's a different thing. It's not. Punk seemed more like fashion.
Yeah, imported stuff also.
Definitely influenced by what was going on in London. But it was all coming from photographs. It was coming from images of London punks with their hair sprayed up like a mohawk, standing
like fresh from
several
England.
Centimeters above their head. Yeah, different colors, this kind of thing. They saw punks in Japan saw this and they did that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but these people were different. They weren't following trends. They were trying to find something that was outside of all that. Yeah. Another example is Masana, who would play for his events lasted maybe 30 seconds, sometimes a minute, where he would pre-record noise. I don't actually know how he made it. Maybe feedback with a guitar or feedback from a microphone, multi-layered. I don't know how he did it actually, but he would put on this tape, and then he would jump. He would climb up onto the PA system and then jump onto a drum set that was on the stage, and play the drums in this way. He would jump onto the drum set and fall onto it, and he just kept doing that. He kept going back, climbing back up onto the speaker, and then jumping onto the drums.
But this was when also 80s or
yeah. And for him, it was a kind of endurance, where he would endure the pain of jumping onto this, like falling onto this drum set. Onto the metal, onto the these hard surfaces, just keep jumping onto them until he just couldn't deal with it anymore. He couldn't suffer it anymore. So these performances lasted 30 seconds, sometimes a minute, sometimes 2 minutes, but no more than that. Thank you.
And so what is important for you in sound? How do you approach it? What is sound for you?
It's changed a lot. At first, it was about creating a kind of assault.
Assault?
Assault. Huh? Attack. Yeah. A kind of attack. Sustained attack. Now it's more like creating a kind of seduction. And what has value for me is a kind of, personally, I mean, is a kind of internal search. And the music that I'm making now is a way of trying to sort of, at the very least, encourage that kind of internal search for the moment that it lasts, for the time that the music lasts.
So it makes you travel in your mind.
Maybe.
Think.
Or yeah.
But you also...
I mean, that's what it does for me, and that's what I'm sort of looking for.
And all these interfering sounds which arise because of the space in which they're mm-hmm. projected, now this is the massage that you get to...
Yeah, and it's different for every place that I perform it, because the acoustics and the space are always different. So it's always, for me, it's always like, even though the elements I know, it's like hearing them it's hearing them differently, not for the first time, but differently. Yeah. So it's for me, it's very sensual experience, and it's always like a sensual experience. It's always new.
Sensual.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you also want to encourage the listeners to come to this possible situation.
I put it out and see what happens.
Yes.
Whether or not that or whatever happens is up to that's more in control of the listener.
Mm.
That's what the listener brings to this. It's not just putting on a show and people just sort of sit and watch the show. It doesn't work like that. And it's a more of an interactive kind of process someone who's listening is not being in any way passive. It's more an active.
It doesn't work as consuming. It's needed as a relation.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And the visual parts that you do, the movies, the film, no? Do you also find it sensual in that sense, or more?
Well,
brain.
Those are more, for me, those are more sort of existential searches.
So, more linked to the words. And story.
An example.
Yeah.
I did a film called Another Useless Prayer, where the image that you see is this tunnel. with these curved sides, and there is light that changes very, very slowly, very subtly. But you know that you're looking into a tunnel, and you start to sort of all kinds of things you can imagine. You start to think about where it goes. You start looking at the light and seeing the light as beautiful. And this the movement of the light can be very sublime. And after a while, you realize that you're looking into a toilet. So the idea for me, when the inspiration for this was seeing something sublime at a moment where I least expected it. I like that.
When you were making this,
when I was taking a piss, I was looking at the toilet. And I was, wait a minute, look at the light here. Look at that. That's nice. That's beautiful. And that I did not. It was coming at a time where I was. I would often look at the toilet and I would think, I want to go down. I want to just, I've had enough. I just want to flush myself down and be done with all this. Why did I get up today? Why am I still breathing? And I'm just feeling this, pissing into this toilet, and all of a sudden I start seeing this beauty.
The light at the end of
this elegant, this elegance here, and I just do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Lay down, lay down, yeah.